Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to episode 35 of the Runner's World podcast, the weekly podcast bringing you all the latest running news, views and interviews. I'm Rick Pearson, the Runner's World section editor, and I'm here with Ben Hobson, the digital editor. Ben, what have we got coming up this week?
With the cross-country season about to begin, we're revisiting the run equal debate in the company of Maud Hodgson. Maud is a firm believer that men and women should run equal distances at cross-country. We also have a tech guru, Kieran Auger, to give us a roundup of the latest and greatest running gizmos. Rick, what have you been up to?
I took part in the last Friday of the month 5K in Hyde Park.
Good race.
Good race. I think it's £5 to enter. Very old school. You get your kind of number through the post, turn up, no medals, no T-shirts,
yep.
Just a time.
Good.
And I was hoping to do 17-something, and I ran 18.07. It's a bit like, it's quite close.
It is.
I forgot how run hard for a while, and it's quite emotional, like these things. Do you mean when you're like really on the edge the whole time?
Have you done any speed work?
You have. I have done some speed work over the last sort of 3 weeks.
Right.
So
3 weeks is, I mean, that's a good benchmark.
Yeah, you think it should be.
Give yourself eight, and you can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, by the end of the year, 17 something by the end of the year would be
very nice.
Would be good, but it's good. Lots of club runners, quite high standards.
Yeah, there is. I've got a couple of mates who do it regularly. Yeah. And it's a good test, that one.
It is. It's good. I think as a runner, if you carefully pick your races, you can start thinking that you're really good. I'm the sort of person who finishes near the top 10, and then you do a race like that, or you do a cross country, which we'll talk about later on.
Yeah,
and it can, and it's really good for
shows you.
That you actually, there's plenty of work to be done.
Exactly.
How about you, Ben? What are you up to?
In Ben's ongoing boring injury update, but no, because I did something for the first time, which I've not done before, which I did some aqua jogging.
Right.
Which I wouldn't say I've scoffed at, but I certainly haven't gone like, this looks like a thing that everyone should do. Mm. But when you can't run, which people will relate to, then the desire to is strong.
Sure.
So offered the low impact opportunity of some striding down the swimming pool on holiday.
Excellent.
I did it. It's actually really good. I mean, you can achieve actual DOMS if you try hard enough.
So was this pool though? This was part of where you were staying on holiday.
Just literally where we were staying on holiday. So it's not set up like you're not. You see like aqua jogging setups which are like ridiculously like complicated,
okay.
And you're like against a stream or whatever. It's,
right.
It's not that. This was literally just like an indoor 10-meter pool.
See, I think this makes sense because the thing for me with aqua jogging is. I just worry that I look a bit odd in a public pool.
No one saw me.
Yeah.
No one saw me do it.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
Yeah.
If I went to the Lido and I started just, in the slow lane, just walking up and down, I feel like it would draw attention. This was just, but I guess it made me feel like I would probably do it now as just out of that necessity.
Just go out there and
just
start
a necessity.
Jogging.
Like I want to move like I'm running, but without the damage. So why not? So anyway, if you book yourself a holiday just to go aqua jogging, if you're injured, that's my advice.
Excellent. Well, I think without further ado, we should welcome our guest of the week.
Great.
Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Our guest this week is Maud Hodgson. Maud is one of the leading voices in the Run Equal campaign, which is focused on allowing men and women to run equal distances over cross country, rather than the current state of affairs, which often sees the men running significantly further than the women. With the cross country season about to begin in earnest, it seemed like the right time to catch up with Maud to find out what has changed and what hasn't. Maud, you were the first guest we ever had on the Runner's World podcast, which published about 18 months ago. At that point, Run Equal was in its infancy. How would you rate the progress thus far?
I would give it maybe about a 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Important changes have happened, but the pace of change has not been really as much as we would hope. But on the other hand, we are very optimistic and confident, and we really do believe it's a matter of when and not if.
Okay, so that's good. So you feel like the change is going to come, but people are dragging their feet a little bit.
Well, I think so, yeah. I mean, I think since we've started, we've shown that we can, you know, we can deal with all the rational objections to equalisation. We've got to the point that what we're dealing with is, to a large extent, emotional resistance to change. Mm. Change is scary.
Let's talk about a rational objection and what would be an emotional objection then.
We've heard lots of arguments about there wouldn't be enough time in the timetables for championship events to fit in longer races for women. And to that, I would say we're not necessarily talking about longer races for women. We're talking about races of the same distance for men and women.
Yeah.
The actual distance can be whatever is needed to fit the timetable. Some of the people who are leading the way in this are the Scots. They have less daylight in the Scottish winter than we have in the south. So if the Scots can do it, I think we could do it in the south of England.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. But on the emotional arguments, is this stuff that, like, it's tradition for these distances to be different for men and women?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think, yeah, cross-country is a sport that's rooted in tradition. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, a lot of the tradition is wonderful. I mean, the venues that we race at, in Parliament Hill, for instance, that's part of the you know, romance and appeal of the sport.
Yeah.
We don't need to lose any of that. You know, we've still got all the traditional venues. We just need to make a few tweaks. And, you know, I think also people are worried that if the races are longer, that people won't want to run. But that's not been the case in Scotland, where they've equalised the distances. Attendances are improving for both men and women over
the
years.
Oh, that's good to see. Yeah.
I mean, their experience has been very positive.
Yeah.
Where does the influence for change come from in terms of the runners? And then, because I know there's lots of chat about surveys being done about people who want to change and who don't. And so is it the governing body itself?
Well, it's all quite messy because there are a lot of different bodies involved, in particularly in cross country. UK Athletics they don't run the national championships. They run the cross challenge, which includes the Inter-Counties Championship, which is in many ways the most prestigious domestic event because it doubles as the trials for the World Championships. And one of the really big bits of progress is that they have made that equal distances from last season. And the national championships are run by, in England, the English Cross Country Association. And in Scotland, it's run by Scottish Athletics directly. They've got one less level of bureaucracy there, which is possibly why they've been able to progress more quickly. And then there's below that level, there's the counties, and we've had some success at county level. Last season, Essex and Suffolk were the first two counties to go for equal distances, which was a real pleasure for me, particularly because I run in Essex. I was able to take part in that first equal distance.
Would you say then that it's the English Nationals then, that's the big hurdle that needs to be overcome, and then everything else might follow from that?
Well, yes, I think so, because I think when the English Nationals switches to equal distances, then there'll be some momentum, and then a lot of other events like the counties are saying, well, we're going to use the same distances as the English Nationals because our events are trials for that. That's less of an argument than it used to be, because the county championships often serve as trials for the inter-counties, which is now equal distances.
I also question how much of a cross-country field is really training exclusively for the English Nationals. I think for lots of club runners, the standard's so high at English Nationals, you don't think, well, as long as I come in the top 850 here, then my season's been a success.
Well, absolutely. I mean, for me, you know, I'm a run-of-the-mill club runner.
Yeah.
You know, I'm competing more against other members of my own club in these events.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that's like most people, that I don't think a lot of people are thinking, it's all roads to the English Nationals. Could be wrong.
But then do you think that the counter to that then is that the equal argument is quite niche? Is the run equal distance issue so sort of small in terms of the vast scale of the whole running season that it's not of that much importance? I am not saying I agree with this. I'm just putting it out there.
Well, I agree with you in a way that it is quite niche. That, you know, we run the same distances on the roads, on the track.
Yeah.
Pretty much everywhere else, with a few exceptions, other than cross country, which in a way makes it all the more odd that we've still got this anachronism that we race different distances. And, you know, that brings me back to one of the other arguments that I've heard about why races shouldn't be any longer than they are, which is that people say that it will put off track runners from taking part in cross country in the winter. And it's a valid argument that we need to make these races appeal to a wide variety of runners, but it hasn't got anything to do with gender, because the track runners, whether they're male or female, will be racing the same events.
What do you think the current message sends out with unequal distances?
As soon as you start having shorter races for girls, it's very subtly telling girls that, you know, the sport is a men's field. And it's subtly telling boys the same thing, that, you know, they're the main event and that girls need a slightly watered-down version of it. And it just very subtly chips away at their confidence and ambition. And that's an insidious thing that we should move away from. We should be doing quite the opposite in sport. We should be empowering young people of both genders.
Definitely, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit more about the Wear the Ribbon campaign?
The one thing we don't want to do with the Run Equal campaign is we're not in the business of disrupting any events or any form of protest and campaign that stops events from running smoothly. We don't do that. But the wearing ribbons, wearing green and purple ribbons, which is the colours of the suffragette movement, is a very positive way of showing other runners and any media coverage that we support equal events.
Definitely. I mean, a lot of people pointed out the kind of irony of this in that we've had it this year with loads and loads of high profile victories in races won outright by female runners. So, you know, Jasmine Paris is probably the most famous one of that in the spine. It does seem weird, doesn't it, to sort of suggest in cross country that women actually aren't very good at endurance stuff. They need to do less.
Absolutely. Whatever the distance is, men can run faster. They run approximately 10% faster. And that holds surprisingly true from anything from the sprints to the ultra marathons. That performance difference is more or less 10%. But, I mean, as you've just said, women absolutely can match the men and then some for endurance.
Yeah.
If anything, we should be giving the men a nice short sprint so they can show their explosive speed.
Exactly.
You know, we'll slug it out over 15K.
I think there's a lot of male cross-country runners who would probably be up for that, actually. Yeah, and you're right, you pointed out, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be women running further. It could be a meet in the middle distance.
Absolutely,
it?
Which is what happened at the World Championships and the Scottish National Championships. It used to be 12K for men and 8 for women, and now everybody runs 10, which is, I think, a very sensible solution.
Yeah.
And I think it's an important principle that equality does not necessarily mean the women change to do what the men do, as if what the men do is the gold standard that we must all aspire to. The importance is the principle that we all do the same. You know, once we've agreed that, then we can work out what the best distance is for each event.
I remember you pointing this out last time, but if we kind of went with the tradition argument, then we would be, and we'd take that to the track, say, you'd be left with this sort of weird scenario where women couldn't run any further than 1,500 metres in the Olympics.
Until the 1984 Olympics, that was the case. And then Catherine Switzer was instrumental in getting the marathon added to the Olympics, which actually happened before the 5,000 or 10,000 metres. Traditions all very well, but good traditions adapt and evolve to move with the times.
Where can people find out more from the Run Equal campaign?
Well, we have a website, which is runequal.org. And we have a Twitter account, which is run_equal. We have a Facebook group, which is actually called Gender Equality in Athletics. So, you know, follow any of those and you'll find out more about what's going on. And the main thing we would say to people who would like to see these things change is talk to your clubs, talk to the leagues that you run in. You start the conversation, because sometimes these things I like that simply because nobody's challenged it.
Are you going back up to Scotland, Maud, for the Scottish Nationals then, until the English Nationals equalises?
Well, I would love to. We went last year and we had a fantastic time. It was a brilliant event and the spirit was so positive.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody was loving the fact that we were all racing on equal terms. Mm. I didn't hear a single person say the women's race should be shorter or the men's race should be longer. So in a way, I would love to, but it's quite an expensive commitment, both in terms of time and money, to travel up to Falkirk. You know, I'm based in London.
Well, we keep our fingers crossed that hopefully such journeys won't be necessary in the near future. So thanks very much for coming on the Runners World podcast, talking about the Run Equal campaign, and best of luck with pushing it forward further.
Great, thanks for having me.
So Kerry's not around this week.
Too many baby shams at the weekend.
Yeah, pulled his hamstring, couldn't make it in.
Oh, damn.
So you're going to be doing the weekly running news?
Yeah, and it's not really news, to be honest. I'm just
going
to.
Oh, great.
It is. It's very much running news. But instead of the usual tidbits of what's happening on, it's impossible not to talk about Doha.
Yeah.
And the world champs. And of course, some positives, like the silver for Dina and the mixed relay events, which were, I think, were, you know,
yeah, good fun.
Super interesting and like good to see. But. Sadly,
was everyone?
Sadly, the chat is pretty negative about the whole thing. You've got empty stadiums, internet chatter about corruption and location of events. A big shadow of doping once again looming large, especially with the men's 100 meter result.
Yeah,
a midnight marathon in the heat with 18 people pulling out, mate. You know, I mean, it's. It looked a bit of a sorry state of affairs, really, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think they were talking about see the Dina Ash-Smith thing last night, where she did like a lap of honour, and it should be like this amazing moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a handful of people there, and it's a shame, isn't it? I mean, I think Tom Craggs talked about this last week, but he said, you know, it's great to spread athletics around to nations who haven't had it.
Yeah.
But there needs to be some practical things need to be considered. And it needs to be a kind of local interest as well, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think going to a look. I mean, 100% agree with what Tom was saying. But if there's literally no one there to watch it, there's no point. I think that, some really significant things were highlighted, I think. And I don't know how a governing body can not recognise the noise being made about what they've done. But certainly it seems to just carry on, and I think that it doesn't help athletics.
Yes, agreed.
Which it should. These should be the benchmarks that wow people into considering taking part, starting, doing something, and it's just going to be, it's a shambles of just like, why?
Michael Johnson, possibly sports best commentator, in my opinion. And he says, I'm all about the athlete. And I think, actually, if you're an athlete and you win an event here or you get on the podium or you just experience something here, you're not actually getting.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The full experience.
Oh, no.
You should have a full... And actually, a crowd. We saw that in London 2012. I know we like to sort of harp on about how wonderful our own Olympics were, but like... The crowd were such a part of what was great about London 2012, and they get more out of the athlete. Athletes respond to a great atmosphere, I think.
Well, I mean, you know, the great thing about the Ineos 159 attempt being in Vienna is that Kipchoge himself specifically said that the breaking two Nike at Monza that it lacked atmosphere because it was just select people who were there from Nike and the press, and that was kind of it. So there was no cheering. Whereas now he's going to go and try and do the same thing, but with a crowd, because crowds motivate.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyway, that was the news, is that basically it wasn't a great showing for athletics.
Yeah, well, I think also we mentioned the 159. We had that amazing marathon from Kenisa Bekele
amazing.
In Berlin. So I think he's 2 seconds behind Kipchoge. That's really interesting, I think, from looking at who will take part in London next year.
Yeah.
Could those two go head-to-head? Because I think before that, you think, look, Kipchoge's out on his own. He's like the Bolt of marathon running. But now it's like, okay, right, there's 2 seconds difference. Yeah. Like discounting Monza, like in actual like
races.
Mm. Get those two head-to-head in London. It'd be amazing.
Phenomenal. And I think as well, I think that this is super this is going to make the 159 attempt really interesting because everyone, Kipchoge's been on such a pedestal, justifiably so. Yeah. But for him now to see that someone is 2 seconds off his marathon best pace in a race, first of all, that's going to motivate. It shows that whatever's possible from, you know, it's not just this one man.
Yeah.
There are other people. There's one other who's capable of this sort of pace and speed. So I really think that's going to be a bit of a motivator for sure.
Yeah, and there's an interesting scenario here, isn't there? If Kipchoge doesn't run it, does Bekele then get a chance? Does a team get behind him and say, hey, look, we're going to back Bekele?
Is he a pacer? No.
He's not a pacer, no.
Imagine
he's not
that.
I'm going to try to beat you. Yeah. No, great. I mean, great for marathon running. Great for marathon running. But yeah, amazing run. And shout out to our own Jay Maguire as well.
Oh, yeah. The most important piece of running news is that Jay Maguire ran a, I think I'm going to say 7 minute PB, 8 minute PB even.
Right.
And went sub 4 at Berlin.
Yeah, 3:58, I think.
So massive congratulations and well deserved, Jane. She's trained bloody hard for that.
We're talking tech with Kieran Naga.
Talking tech.
He's an awesome ultra runner.
Talking tech.
Talking tech. He's very charming.
Talking tech.
Knows his polar from his garment.
Talking tech.
Kieran, welcome back to the Runner's World podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
No, it's great. You conquered sleep last time we chatted.
I've done sleep. I've done training load. I've got that mastered.
Yeah. Power, we've done.
We've done power. Yeah,
power. Great.
Yeah. I'm basically turning into kind of the Terminator version of a runner. Soon everything will be sorted and everyone can stop running.
Great. Skynet.
What a service he offers. Fantastic. Yeah.
So this week we've got some, I've decided to break it up a little bit, and we've got some small pieces of new tech that I think are going to make quite a bit of difference, coming from a few brands. So they're more little tech nuggets really than big sort of experiments I've been doing on myself.
Yeah, okay.
I decided to, you know,
that's good.
Enough experimentation on myself, give myself a break,
sure.
You know, reset the study. And one of them, you guys may well have seen that Garmin recently launched the new Fenix 6.
Yep.
And there's about 20 different varieties of that watch, but we're going to pick on one of the features out of there, which is Pace Pro. Now, Pace Pro is essentially what Garmin have done is they've looked at those little bits of paper that you pick up at race expos that have all the splits on them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
For all the different distances and times that you want to run. And they've made that into a digital thing.
Great.
So it's on your watch. Basically, how that works is you can create any course. It's a bit fiddly that you have to create the course and you can't just dive in and pull previous kind of existing New York Marathon, Berlin Marathon.
Right. Mm.
So you tell it you're going to run the London Marathon, you set the course, you tell it how fast you want to run so you can set a pace or a goal time, and then it'll automatically take into account all of the elevation of the course and break down your splits and stick it on your watch with a simple screen that then tells you what your target pace is for that split, for that mile or kilometre, what you're currently running at, how much of that split you've got left. So a little bar guide that tells you if you're, you know, nearly done the mile. And then finally you get how far you are behind or ahead overall. So basically, this is the death, as far as I'm concerned, of difficult maths late into races.
Yeah. As long as you haven't done the usual thing of running not in a precise straight line around the course and you're now like mile markers are separate to the course markers.
That's going to be, that'll be interesting to see how that stacks up. That if your watch is buzzing a little bit ahead of time, then your pacing is still out. But that will still involve some kind of 0.2 sums that, I mean, you guys have been there, right? You get to the end of the race or a few miles out and you cannot for the life of you work out whether or not you're going to hit the target time or not.
Absolutely not.
Do the sums over and over again. I restart. I'll be like, let's start again from scratch. Do the maths again, get halfway through it, forget where I was.
Yeah.
And then another mile's passed and then you have to recalculate.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, if the GPS is there or thereabouts and you hit the mile markers at a decent time, it's going to take some of that pain away.
Especially with elevation. You throw that into the mix and it suddenly allows you to go, well, mile 3, there's that hill, which means I'm going to be running much slower. And you prepare for that.
Yeah, and you can actually, in the app, you can dictate to the Pace Pro how hard you want to run the hill. So it'll adjust.
Oh, wow.
You can say, okay, I want to attack the hills or I run them easy.
Right.
And you can also, this is quite clever, you can also tell it whether or not you want to do positive or negative splits.
Nice. I want to do a negative split.
Obviously, everyone's going to put negative splits and then not do it. But, and it'll adjust it accordingly. So I think that's quite nice. Because if you know you've got a couple of big hills in there, you can say, I don't want to be so aggressive on those.
Mm.
What I would really love to do it, and I've spoken to some other people who disagree, is for it to adjust real time. So, you know, after 2 or 3 miles, if you're not necessarily hitting that target pace for whatever reason, you might have been stuck in some congestion.
Yeah.
Maybe you slowed it down a little bit on the hills, or you weren't feeling into your flow, that it would adjust and maybe pick a mile later on where it made sense to pick up the pace.
Okay.
A downward stretch or something. Yeah. But it won't. You just get further and further behind yourself.
Right.
And also, I think, you know, the one thing we just sort of mentioned is the courses, you know, Strava already hold all of that information on the course. You can go in and you can get quite a lot of detail about elevation, distance, how people have run it. And Garmin has all of that data as well. So what I would like, you could just go in and pick a list rather than have to create the course for the Berlin Marathon.
Definitely.
Perhaps that will come with time.
And this is just on the Fenix 6?
It is at the moment, but we're told that it's going to drop down to the 4Runner family soon, which makes total sense. All of the technology that's required is there. So
that's good.
It will come, expected to come down even to the lower end 4Runners as well.
Great.
I've been very much relying on, anyone who's been to the London Marathon Expo would have seen on the Lucozade stand each year, there are these, you know, these pace bands.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been doing that as a kind of primitive version. So it's good to know there's going to be some tech helping out as well.
I've always just written it on my hand.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And then it washes off in the sweat.
You're panicking.
That's the issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
And speaking of Strava, actually, Strava have announced some new features, which they're small features, but I think they could mean big news for the future of how Strava is used and how it works in conjunction with watches.
Right.
So there's two new features. One is fitness and the other is perceived exertion.
Mm.
So fitness and fatigue looks at your heart rate data. You have to be wearing a heart rate device.
Right.
And it will then crunch the numbers from your runs and tell you where your fitness level is at. And you can look at a single day or a single run and go back over a couple of years to spot your trends. Basically, it's fitness trends. It's a bit like the VO2 max scores that you would get on a Garmin or the Polar Running Index.
Is this you predetermining your zones? Is that kind of like how it does it? Or is it so, like, obviously that's the base marker of all these heart rate based things, is you go in and you do a test or whatever it is and you set.
It will be very important to have done that correctly.
Yeah.
It will take the data that you've got recorded from your watch or from the chest strap. Yeah. So you want to make sure your zones are right. Otherwise, it might think that you're working harder than you are. But it basically lets you sort of peek into that kind of overall sort of fitness picture and start to plot trends over time. It takes 6 to 8 weeks to be accurate. So it's new. It's relatively new now. So people who are using it, give it a bit of time to bed in and see. It'll be interesting. We'd love to hear how you guys get on and see if it's accurate with your fitness levels.
Yeah.
The other thing that you get from this is a weekly effort. So you can see your total relative effort for the week so far.
Right.
And then you can see it within a range. So you can see if you're lower than previous weeks or higher. And this gets into the world of training load and overtraining, injury risk, managing your training output. And you can see it's on a bar chart and you get a kind of a range.
Right.
And the idea really is if you hit between the two lines and you're in range, then you'll be improving your fitness, not overreaching.
Got it.
And getting better steadily.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
And that's all on Summit, right?
And that's all on Summit. Yeah. So, it's, you know, they're starting to add extra features that I think are going to start to justify that the price tag that you get with Summit, which is around sort of £50 for the year if you take a year. It also will give you a little readout after runs saying, or if you look at your fitness, saying things like this is a good level for building or maintaining fitness. So again, some of the quite advanced training effect features that you get on your watches coming to Strava. So why I think that's really interesting is that if you think about it, Strava and watches have sort of played nice for a long time.
Yeah.
They've been quite separate.
Yeah.
Strava's done one thing, watches done the other.
Mm.
But now, if you've got a fairly cheap running watch with a heart rate monitor, you can fire your data into Strava, and Strava is now going to crunch some of those numbers and give you some of the training effect feedback that you would expect from a higher end running watch. So it's an interesting one, because I've heard lots of people sort of say, you know, why would I get Summit? What's the extra that I'm getting? So they're starting to make them a little bit more relevant and encourage people to use it more. So
yeah, that's a good point, Kieran. If you could save, say, £100 on a watch, and because you're going to let Strava do some of that kind of coaching aspect to you, Summit's £50.
Yeah, exactly.
That's profit, Ben.
Just crunch those numbers, Rick. Yeah, exactly.
And then I think just a little mention, a little nod to the Apple Watch. Series 5 is out. I know a lot of runners ask that question a lot. You know, should I invest in an Apple Watch? Is it a running tool? And with every version of the Apple Watch, we sort of have to answer that question. there's not a huge amount for new runners. There's an always on screen, which makes it easier. You don't have to do the raise to wake so that you see your stats come to life, which can sometimes not work.
Yeah.
It's always on, so you can just glance down and flash and the screen will be there without draining battery life, which is another big thing with the Apple Watch, is extending that battery life. But I think more interesting is there's a new trend section, which you have to go into the activity app and you can see if your average pace is trending faster or if your VO2 max is improving.
Okay.
Which again, you know, it's Apple sort of dipping into these metrics that are a little bit more involved or whatever that, you know, the runners would like. So, but I probably even bigger news than that, I think, is that the Apple Watch Series 3 is £199.
Yeah, and that was good.
And that is very good. If that puts it in the kind of top end of the budget watches, really, top or bottom end of the mid-range price bracket. So you're getting a lot of features there for a good price. And if you like a smartwatch first and you want to have some running features added to that, that's definitely worth a look.
Right, nice.
And then I've picked one game changer.
Yeah.
And we're gonna flip into another sport for a second. Am I allowed?
He's been aqua jogging.
Do what you want.
So there's Zwift. We've talked about Zwift on here before. It's basically the virtual cycling and running platform where you can use a turbo trainer or a pod and a treadmill to run in a virtual world. Well, they've just announced that they've partnered up with the International Cycling Union to launch their very first set of esports virtual races. So this is a world championships that's going to happen in 2020. There's proper prize money.
Yeah.
There are going to be proper people taking part. And it's all done in this virtual world, virtually. And my question really is,
how long?
How long before we're on a treadmill racing?
For sure. Well, I mean, it happens.
There'd be more people watching than at Doha.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, that was my joke.
Sorry.
No, but I mean, you take into account that Zwift obviously hosts runs and races already, which people can sign up to virtually. So that is happening in the online community, the running. That's already doing it. But all it would take is the IAAF or someone to just suddenly go, all right, we'll do the same.
I think prize money is the game changer, isn't it?
Huge.
If money's on the table, then athletes will come out and do it.
Yeah, I got one more thing, which is, you know, I like to do a thing that's been puzzling me. And actually, it started with a tweet from you, Ben. I saw the other day that you'd commented that basically a pita bread out of the toaster is the hottest known matter to man.
It is.
And then it got me thinking, I don't think anyone has ever pulled a pita bread out of the toaster and cut it open without burning their fingers or pinned a race number on right the first time.
Yep. Mm.
And that got me thinking, what's going on with technology and why are we still pinning?
Why are we still pinning
sort
of paper numbers on us? Yeah.
It's a big thing in cycling as well about aerodynamics. If you've got people who spend millions of pounds on development for aero suits and bikes and helmets and stuff like that, and then they go to a race and there's a big flappy bit of paper stuck to their back.
Yeah.
I don't know what the solution is, and maybe we have, safety pins and paper is the ultimate technology for this particular purpose.
Yeah.
But maybe some augmented reality that the stewards could have glasses.
Yeah.
And if you were wearing a chip or something, that augmented reality would flash up. Because it's basically about showing you're in the race.
Yes, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Projected holograms.
Projected holograms on every runner.
Amazing.
Do it, please, guys.
Yeah.
Do you go T-shirt on and then attempt to put the number on?
No
or
way.
Do you go, or do you do it without?
Actually, the best way to do it, especially in a vest,
put it
on over your legs. Right.
This is madness.
Put your feet through the leg holes. Put your feet through the armholes.
Yeah.
Pull it up, and then you've got the tension is correct across the knee, and you can then pin your number on level and straight.
This is amazing.
This has to be a video. I have to see this.
It works with a vest. It's difficult with a T-shirt.
I'm going to go home directly and try this.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you a nice platform.
But it's not just that. If you pin it on your shirt, that's it. You have to wear your T-shirt.
Yeah,
if it gets
too
hot, ultras as well, there's a difference. You know, I tend to pin it on my shorts so that I can take layers on and off. But it's just not up to scratch. We need tech.
No, there does need to be technology,
I don't want you to have to be stepping into your vest.
Technology, please. Someone fix that. Kieran, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say a huge thanks to our guests, Maud Hodson and Kieran Alger, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, interviews, and much, much more from the wider world of running, please head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Please like and subscribe on iTunes. All your comments are more than welcome. Let us know what you think. And thanks to Acast, our hosting partner. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.